All right, so how many of you all read Stephen Covey's popular book that was published 30 years ago, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People? Got a few people, okay. So it was part self-help and part, you know, how to succeed in business, right? And the whole premise of the book is that in order to be successful, you need to align yourselves with your values and principles. And the principles that he presents are part of a sort of generic, secular character kind of ethic. He then teaches these seven habits that he claims will keep you focused on the principles that will make you successful. And these habits are supposed to become integrated into your being, things that you do so routinely that you don't have to think about them. Well, we know there are all kinds of habits. Some are rooted in core principles, and others are not. Some lead to success, and others do not. Habits can be good or bad. Perhaps you bite your fingernails when you're anxious. It's a bad habit. Or maybe you have a really good bedtime routine that helps you consistently get a good night's sleep. That's a good habit. Habits are simply regular acts that we do without much thought. They're usually triggered by some kind of a cue, an alarm going off in the morning, the smell of coffee brewing, or something that you see. Experts vary a little, but the consensus is that it takes about 66 days before a new behavior becomes a habit. Well, Diana Butler Bass believes that gratitude needs to be a habit. And by the way, today is day 50 of our grateful season, so if you're going to make it really become a habit, in theory, you've got to keep it up for at least another 16 days for it to stick. Well, Bass writes about setting up cues to trigger the practice and support the habit, like a prayer book that she keeps by her bed. Even on the days when she doesn't open it, she sees the book, and it reminds her to be thankful. Simple cues like that have helped her develop a habit of noticing gifts and practicing gratitude. And she writes, "To live gratefully involves a number of skills. Noticing when a kindness is done or a benefit is received, returning the gift of thanks to the giver, or embracing the sense of awe instilled, and sharing benefits with others as we are able. Like love," she says, "gratitude multiplies through giving and receiving. Both love and gratitude can become far more than ephemeral emotions. With practice, they become habits." Well, many of the Psalms are songs of gratitude. The 126th is, with its remembering that God changed Zion's circumstances for the better. They sing, "The Lord has done great things for them." They are noticing the gifts. They're returning thanks to the giver and embracing the sense of awe instilled. This song teaches the church then and now that it should give thanks and seek God's work in its own restoration. The Lord our God is still in our midst, recalibrating our hearts, our minds, and our vision of the future. The psalmist sings, "The Lord has done great things for us, and we rejoiced. Restore our fortunes, O Lord, like streams in the desert. May those who sow in tears reap with shouts of joy. Those who go out weeping, bearing the seed for sowing, shall come home with shouts of joy, carrying their sheaves." In the moment when the Israelites sing this song, it sounds like it's pretty obvious why they're grateful. I mean, God has changed the circumstances in Zion. What's not to be grateful for? But it's not always that easy. Most of the time, the gifts are a little harder to see. That's why Bass says the practice of gratitude comes down to attentiveness and awareness. All around us, every day, there are gifts. No matter our challenges or our feelings, there are gifts. Mostly unnoticed, unappreciated, and often disregarded. But if we cultivate our awareness of those gifts, thankfulness becomes habitual. As a habit, gratitude becomes a steadying companion, a daily, perhaps even hourly, disposition of appreciation. And it's true that every day there are gifts. Whether we are in crisis mode or not, regardless of our feelings or the challenges we are facing, there are gifts. Sometimes they go unnoticed, and other times they take us by surprise. when gratitude wells up in our being with a mixture of humility and joy. We can cultivate our awareness as a spiritual practice to see those gifts more often. And then something else happens. Thankfulness becomes more habitual, a regular part of how we respond to the world. Gratitude for the good things will still hold the power to surprise and elicit a strong emotional response. However, as a habit, in the midst of hard times, it also becomes a steadying companion. Gratitude for the small things can emerge as a daily disposition of appreciation toward familiar gifts. Notice times when you are grateful. Is it possible to be dominated by fear, anxiety, and anger, and experience gratitude at the same time? Can you see how the practice of gratitude has the power to overcome fear, anxiety, and anger? And don't we need something to counter the dominating fear and anger in the world? Today is the last Sunday of our Grateful series, and it is also the last Sunday in the church liturgical year. Our reading from Colossians is one of the appointed texts for this day, which is called Christ the King, or Reign of Christ Sunday. This is when we celebrate that Christ reigns over all creation, which is yet another big reason to be grateful. The letter to the Colossians says that Jesus rescued us from the control of darkness and transferred us into the kingdom of the Son. And there you get that kingdom language. And the letter continues, lifting Christ up, the firstborn of all creation, the head of the church. All this exaltation of Christ is not an end in and of itself, for the task of Christ is one of reconciliation. It is through Christ that God reconciles. That is at the source of the theme of thanksgiving that continues throughout this letter. And these themes of thanksgiving and reconciliation draw attention to both the reign of Christ in all creation and the implications of that reign for humanity. Through Christ, God transfers humankind from the power of darkness and into the inheritance of the saints of light. The commemoration and celebration of that transfer carries with it, of course, the obligation to gratitude and endurance. See, this portion of the letter to the Colossians that celebrates the reign of Christ over all creation calls us to respond in gratitude. The reign of Christ isn't a matter of theological doctrine. It is a gift to us. It has implications for us. It means that we need not fear earthly authorities, because ultimate authority is God's alone. It means freedom to live in hope, as Christ taught us, rather than living ruled by fear, the way earthly authorities try to control us. The affirmation of this day in the church year has implications for our lives. Another of those implications is that we can respond in gratitude, sharing the good news that nothing can separate us from the love of God and loving God and neighbor. We can remind ourselves that being grateful is not just about me and my heart and my prayers and my hopes, but it is also about us. Gratitude spilling over so as to reform the community all around us into a place of safety and plenty. You know, like when we put the leaf in the table at Thanksgiving to make it big enough for everyone. Gratitude spills over and creates a community, a place of welcome and abundance. But perhaps you don't feel that overwhelming gratitude for the grace of Christ every day. Perhaps you forget that through Christ, God transfers humankind from the power of darkness and into the inheritance of the saints in light. And that's understandable. And so you slip out of the habit of giving thanks. That is why Diana Butler Bass took on the challenge of writing a whole book about the transformative power of giving thanks. Gratitude can and should be a habit. A habit of awareness that reshapes our self-understanding and the choices we make. Maya Angelou said, "If you must look back, do so forgivingly. If you must look forward, do so prayerfully." However, the wisest thing you can do is be present in the present gratefully. We can do that by choosing and cultivating a disposition of gratitude until it becomes a habit. We can develop habits and practices of gratefulness that change us for the better. We can develop cues to initiate thankfulness and establish routines to foster gratitude and that help us to be present. So this week, as we wrap up our grateful series and pause to celebrate Thanksgiving, and as we turn to Advent and awaiting the arrival and return of Christ, I hope our practices of gratitude continue. I hope that living gratefully becomes a habit. For all those of us looking forward to a Thanksgiving meal around the table with loved ones, our hearts ache for those who have no home at all, no table around which to gather, a bare table, or one with too many empty chairs. May God enlarge our circles of gratitude and love. May our habits of gratitude include service, loving our neighbors in the broadest sense, with our hands and feet, with our talent and our treasure. May God weave circles of new vision, new hope, new resolve for all the possibilities that await, opportunities not yet explored, acts of courage and generosity not yet dared. For the Lord our God is still in our midst, recalibrating our hearts, our minds, and our vision of the future. The psalmist sings, "Yes, the Lord has done great things for us, and we are overjoyed." May we have the courage to step into the habits, the spiritual practices of experiencing gratitude in our lives, for God has done great things, and we are overjoyed. Amen.